This is Radio Boston. I am Tiziana Deering, and if you're fully vaccinated, you can be indoors with others without masks under some circumstances. Now, this breath of fresh air to everyone from grandparents to best friends came courtesy of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention this morning when they released new guidelines for what people fully vaccinated against COVID-19 can do safely now. It comes as state health data show about 700,000 people in Massachusetts, that's about 10% of the population, are fully vaccinated. It also gives the kind of hope that some public health professionals feel should be more present in our safety messaging. So let's talk about the new guidelines, and let's talk about how we talk about what we can and can't do in this pandemic. Joining us, Professor Julia Marcus, epidemiologist and associate professor at Harvard Medical School. Julia Marcus, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start, Professor Marcus, with the guidelines, because they just came out this morning. So many people were waiting for them. Were you relieved when they came out and you saw them today?
Relieved is an understatement. I was delighted. I have to say, as a caveat, I haven't had a chance to read every word. I was writing a grant and then emerged and saw all the excitement about this. And so I have taken a look at the guidelines. I just haven't been able to read in detail, but I think they look fantastic and really reasonable and evidence-based.
So let me pull out a couple things that stood out for me. The CDC now says that vaccinated people can gather unmasked with people from another household who are not yet vaccinated. The caveat there that is that as long as those people are at low risk of serious illness from the virus. So let's say you are grandparents who are vaccinated. You can go to the household of your grandchildren as long as everyone in that household is low risk for serious illness, even if they're not vaccinated. This is huge. Grandparents are just one group for whom that's got huge implications. Do you feel like we're ready for that, or were we ready for it, 6 months ago? What's your reaction?
I think we are ready. I think that there are challenges with undoing all the kind of efforts that we have made to take these precautions. I think we've strongly associated, and appropriately during a pandemic, have strongly associated certain behaviors, particularly being indoors with people, unmasked, not distanced, with something that's very high risk. And I think what the CDC is telling us now is that with these vaccines, that risk calculation changes, as it should. But I think approaching this with caution is appropriate, and they're not telling people you can go back to life as normal right now. They're telling people, here are some small changes you can make in your everyday lives that may actually make kind of a large difference for people, even though they're going to continue to take precautions in public for the time being.
I noted you talked about the risk of, we don't want to undo the progress we've made in convincing people about how to be safe. I'm looking at the CDC website right now under the section, what hasn't changed. A couple of the bullets: you should still avoid medium or large size gatherings. You should still delay domestic and international travel. If you do travel, you still need to follow the CDC requirements and recommendations. You will still need to follow guidance at your workplace. In the public health community, is there concern that when good news comes about loosening practices, for example, for subpopulations, that spills over and everybody loosens up when they shouldn't? Is that a thing?
I think there are concerns about that. I'm not too concerned about that here. I think that people understand when they've been vaccinated or they're around other people who are vaccinated, how that risk calculus changes, and that's what the CDC is helping people do in a nuanced way with these guidelines. I don't think that the existence of vaccines and, the knowledge that people are starting to be vaccinated is going to be enough for people to start taking more risks in their own lives. I don't think people's, everyday considerations about risk take into consideration that other people are experiencing reduced risk, if that makes sense. So I'm not too concerned about that. I do think I like that the CDC is making this distinction between public and private settings. I think that's important. I think some of the really strong messaging that we were hearing, particularly in the media, as vaccines, the good data on vaccines started to emerge, we saw a lot of articles, nothing changes for you after vaccination. Don't think you can take your mask off. And I think a lot of that came from the need to emphasize continued precautions in public settings. And I think that that's right for now until many more people have had a chance to be vaccinated. But the CDC is recognizing that not all interactions happen in public. Many of them happen in private spaces. And just these small changes that allow, one or two households to start interacting, I think is going to make a big difference in people's lives.
I want to stay with that for a minute because it strikes me that it's possible that these small changes, while important, can also be confusing when sort of translated in the public sphere. And let me juxtaposition for a minute. So now you've got the CDC happily talking about some circumstances where people who are vaccinated can really be with other people, not wear a mask, let their guard down a little bit, again, under certain circumstances. On the flip side, within the last month, we've heard both President Biden and Dr. Anthony Fauci talk about the possibility that we're still masking into 2022. That feels a little like messaging whiplash. And one is relieving, and the other is a sucker punch. So how do we think about that, and how does the everyday person survive that kind of whiplash and know what to do?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I feel the whiplash myself between feeling just incredible optimism about these vaccines and what they can do for us, and also some of the uncertainty about emerging variants and how long it will take to get the population vaccinated. But I think every day we're hearing good news about new vaccines that are going to increase supply, and the timeline for getting most adults vaccinated is getting shorter. So I am not, I defer to Dr. Fauci, but I have hope that we will not be wearing masks in 2022. But I will say, there are going to be people who are never vaccinated, who either because they are unable to be vaccinated because of contraindications, or because they're unwilling, or hopefully we don't have this situation, but they may not have gotten access, even though they sort of theoretically should. And we're certainly seeing access issues and equity issues in vaccine distribution now that will hopefully be alleviated over time. Children are another population that is not going to be vaccinated on the same timeline as adults. And so I think there are questions about what this will look like, let's say in the fall, with kids back in school when most adults have been vaccinated, not all, and kids have not probably yet been vaccinated. So, what will there be a need to continue wearing masks? I don't know.
So I want to talk about an Atlantic article from late February about the five mistakes we keep repeating in this pandemic. You're quoted in it, pushes back on some of our public health messaging and mistakes it has made that may have either undermined the messages or demoralized folks. One of the things it does is push back on the idea that strict rules are useful versus sort of common sense guidelines, especially in an environment where the circumstances are understanding, those are changing. What have we done wrong in our public health messaging, do you think?
That is a big question. I'll start with what you just mentioned, which was one of the parts of that article was addressing strict, particularly binary rules. So I think it's less about the strictness and more about kind of the danger of oversimplification and how that can sometimes replace the intuition that people need to guide their everyday decisions. So, we could think about a number of, very binary rules around, let's say, distancing that I think sometimes took over in places where actually ventilation was more important, for example. So I think you have to give people metrics that they can use. We can't always give people information that's, on a probability scale or continuum as much as we do want to convey a spectrum of risk. I think sometimes you do need to draw the line somewhere to give people some guidelines. But we also have to give people intuition so that they are empowered to make their own decisions because things don't always fit neatly into those binaries.
I remember over the past year you talking with us here on Radio Boston about the importance of not shaming people for their needs, for example, family time, but instead helping people focus on the safest way to get those needs met, to do it. And that has rung to me of compassion and empathy. I don't mean to sound combative with our public health messaging, but have we missed some of the empathy gene in the way we've talked to people about how to be safe, how to protect ourselves and others? Versus what their emotional needs are, their social emotional needs, their mental health needs.
I think there has been, a lot of messaging coming from a lot of different parties in this pandemic. And certainly during the last administration, the CDC was very quiet. And so there were a lot of different messengers stepping in to fill that gap, everyone from politicians to individual experts talking to the media, the media itself, the journalists trying to fill that gap as well. And so it's hard to sort of pin down the messaging, but I think there, I think some of that compassion has gotten a little lost. And I think in particular, we have not necessarily considered certain things essential that are essential and incorporated that into messaging and policy. And I think social connection is one of those things. And of course, that doesn't mean, partying is a need. But I think in general, connecting with other human beings is a fundamental need. And so I think approaching the way that we message about risk and the way that we design policies to reduce risk, when we keep in mind what it is that people really need and also what they really want out of their lives, I think we end up with more effective messaging and policies.
There's one other thing around messaging. We're starting to try to kind of learn now from a year of this, right? And I know over the last year, on air with our guests and with processing the information that's come along, there's been some struggle with what feels like a pitting of the economic and the public health against each other. Some guests have kind of dismissed that out of hand, but others have said, yeah, there is a framing out there that pits our economic well-being against our public health well-being. Like if you follow the public health measures, that's bad for the economy and vice versa. Is that a necessary framing? I mean, are those things pitted against each other? And could we have done a better job with that framing and discussion?
I think it's a false dichotomy and an oversimplification to say that the economy and public health are at odds, or that if you have if you're prioritizing one, you must be deprioritizing the other. I do think much of our public health policies have unfortunately been driven by economic pressures, and that the lack of federal support over the last year, I think that obviously is changing now, but the lack of federal support over the past year has driven some unfortunate decision making at the state and local levels because there was not enough support, let's say, pay certain kinds of workers to stay home, or to give support to schools or workplaces to implement risk mitigation measures. So, I think the economic part of things sort of I don't think those two things are at odds as long as the resources are there to implement these public health measures. And they unfortunately were not for quite some time, but hopefully that's going to look different over these next few months.
And in just a couple of sentences, you told our producer Paris Alston earlier, we're not out of the woods, but we can see the clearing beyond the trees. Is that how you feel now?
I really do. I mean, despite that whiplash we talked about, I think my optimism is generally outweighing any sense of doom that I have right now. I think, we would never have thought that a year ago, we never would have expected to have a number of effective vaccines, very highly effective vaccines by now. And I think that should bring us all a lot of hope.
That's good news. And that is Professor Julia Marcus, an epidemiologist and associate professor at Harvard Medical School. Thanks for the time today. Be well.
Thanks for having me.